All right. We're going to have Bible study this week. We'll have Bible study next week. And we really won't have it again until the 29th of November. In other words, Thursday of the 22nd is...
The 29th of November. Don't we normally not have it in January?
We'll probably have it once in November, end of November, and then we'll probably have maybe one in December. We'll have to take a look at it, and they don't have it again until then. But it's just, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks, then Thanksgiving, we're not having Bible study then.
Why not? I don't mind eating turkey here.
Yeah.
I'm just crying, that's all.
Right. That's what I said. Thanksgiving, what better time to have it with...
All right, everybody, go to 1 Corinthians 6.
Didn't we just start that chapter last week?
Well, we got into that chapter. We're going to go to verse 12. This is the very first verse 12 in this entire chapter. All right. Here's what he says. He says, all things are lawful unto me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any.
Definition of expedient, please.
Expedient means something that makes sense. That it's expedient would be something that, for example, you could go get a hamburger from McDonald's, maybe saving 5 cents if you drove all the way to Idaho. Okay, but that would not be expedient, all right? The best thing would be to pay an extra nickel and get your hamburger right here in Cuba, all right?
True, although I do love the smokehouse that
much. All right. All right. So all things are lawful unto me, and here's what Paul's basically saying. Once he got free from the law of God, in the sense, as a Jew, he doesn't have to follow the law anymore. Okay, all things are lawful. Does that mean I can just do anything?
No.
No, okay. In other words, it doesn't always make sense to do certain things. It's not expedient to do certain things. Is it lawful to take a hammer and hit yourself in the middle of the forehead? Yes. Is it expedient? No. All right. Not a good idea. So, part of the whole idea of Christianity is learning what is expedient for you. And you've heard me use this phrase before, others can, but I can't. What's that mean? It means there's certain things that you have tried to do, and every time you try to do it, they screw you up, they get you off of God, they just get you into sin and such, and yet you've seen other people that look like good Christians and they're doing it. Okay? So the point is, you don't go off of, well, it's lawful, so I can do it, okay? What if New York State makes marijuana lawful? You want me to come in here and smoke a joint?
No!
All right, so the point is, it's lawful, but would it be expedient? No, it wouldn't be expedient, okay? It's not against the law anymore for me to go commit adultery. Would it be expedient? No. You know, it's not a good idea.
Can I tell them expedient out of the Oxford real quick?
Go right ahead.
Here's what the definition of how the Oxford says. It says, convenient and practical, although possibly improper or immoral.
Okay.
That's how the Oxford
says. All right, very good.
Makes sense for 2018.
Yeah. That's convenient and practical, although possibly improper or immoral.
All right. That would certainly come straight out of King James Bible, in that sense. So the whole point is, when you look at stuff, a lot of times we look for excuses, you know, well, I can't find anything against this, okay? You really ought to be looking for something for it, okay?
That's good.
You know, is there a good reason to do this?
My rule of thumb is, when in doubt, don't.
When in doubt, don't, okay?
Actually, practice that.
And it's a great practice.
Yeah, no question.
You know, I've been talking to Dale in this sense, you know, save 7 years now, and 4 years ago, when he was called to preach or whatever, you'd have had a hard time explaining to him why he wasn't qualified, just run out there and run all sorts of roles. Today, he understands it. You know, it's hitting him how much he doesn't know, how many things he trips over, how many mistakes he makes and such. And you know, because again, you begin to learn certain things aren't expedient. Yeah, I can do that, but it might not be a good idea to do that.
Not
So then he just goes on. He says, again, all things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And it goes back to this thing. Can you control a habit that's in your life? Mm-hmm. If you can't, it's probably not something you want to have in your life.
What's lawful mean?
Lawful.
Lawful means it's not against the law. Okay? It's lawful to drive through Black Creek at 40 miles an hour, but it's unlawful to drive through at 60 miles an hour. Okay? So, we go back to this thing again. Is there something in your life that has brought you under its power? Where it controls you? If there is such a thing, you probably want to get rid of it. Okay? And, you know, it's one of those things that's hurting you. And the Apostle Paul just said, I don't want to be brought under the power of anything. Nothing. Okay? All right. Then he says, verse 13, meats for the belly, and the belly for meats, but God shall destroy both it and them. In other words, is there any meat Paul's not allowed to eat? No. Okay? In other words, there's meats for the belly, and the belly's for the meats, but God's going to get rid of all that. And he says, now the body is not for fornication, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. So when you look at your body, you know, strip it down to your nevermore, stand there, look in a mirror, or whatever else, that is not for fornication. God didn't make it for that, okay? And yet, the Lord's for your body. You know, one of the things, when you get into Indian mysticism and a lot of the, you know, the Vedic scriptures, that they get the idea that flesh is bad. You know, that, you know, that when people die, they're going to go to this nirvana state and not have any flesh. God doesn't say that, okay? He's going to resurrect you in your flesh. Jesus Christ is coming to flesh, okay? So the idea is God is for your body. He is for it. He intends to resurrect it again. He intends to make it into what it's supposed to be. So we're not under one of these things where, you know, all flesh is bad or whatever else. We're told not to walk after the flesh because your flesh is hooked to your carnal nature. Okay? You don't let the flesh make decisions. I mean, my flesh would make a lot of decisions and they'd be big mistakes. But there's sometimes my flesh makes decisions like, time to go to bed, time to eat. But I don't want to be brought under the power of that.
So when we're resurrected, it'd be flesh and bones, not blood.
That's right, flesh and bone. All right, verse 14. And God hath both raised up the Lord and will raise up us by his own power. So here's that body. He intends to raise it up. He's raised the Lord up. He's not against your body. He is for your body.
Pastor, is that another difference between God and the devil is God's doing everything in his own power. Devil's only using whatever power was given to him by the body he was given.
Well, that is, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay. That certainly would fly. It's a good observation.
Why is it written like that? Like that distinction between Lord and God?
In the sense of Trinity there. Okay. In the sense, you know, the Lord doing something for the Father. It'll get into that by the time we get to chapter 15. It'll really show you how the Lord's bringing everything back to the Father.
Okay.
All right. Verse 15. Know ye not that your bodies are the members of Christ? Okay. Now, your body. Okay. There you go. What are we talking about? Your legs, your calf, your earlobes and all your unmentionables. Those are all members of Christ. Once a person gets saved, he owns that part of you. That's all part of him. Okay? It goes on and says, members of Christ. Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of an harlot? God forbid. Okay? So the thing is, here's a guy that belongs to Jesus Christ. His body is part of Jesus Christ. And this, we go back to this thing again. When a person first gets saved, it doesn't always occur to them the momentous change that has happened here, that someone else is taking over and someone has a keen interest in your body. And it goes back to this thing again. You know, how long does it take certain people to get over certain things that they're doing or whatever? Again, we licensed Dale to preach, had him preaching when he's still smoking. Why? Because it didn't bother me that he was smoking. I mean, it bothered me in one sense.
Yes.
But I didn't see it as rebellion, okay? It becomes rebellion when God suddenly says, it's time to stop now. I've told Tanya certain things with her. God's going to come. He's going to take them away. He's going to do it. All right, that's it now.
That's it.
We're done with that. Up to this point, you weren't able to handle that. Now we're done with it. It's over. Okay? And then Tanya will do just what I've always done, scream and cry like a baby and fight and all that kind of stuff. And you recognize any of that, Jody?
No.
But, you know, in the end, God wins and you're glad he won. Okay? It's always better when he wins. It's always better when he wins and takes over and does that. All right? All right. He goes on, he says this. Verse 16, know ye not that he which is joined to an harlot is one body? For two, saith he, shall be one flesh. Now here's the Ruckmanites are some of the worst at this, but you run into it a lot with a lot of different people. And the idea is this. Two people having sex together, a man and a woman, they become one body. Okay? Does that make a marriage? No, it doesn't make a marriage. Okay? How do we know that? Because we have the woman at the well who Jesus Christ said, you've had five husbands and the one you are with now is not your husband. Okay? So there, right off the bat, she's shacking up with the guy, she's living with him, yielding her body to him every night, but it's not her husband. Okay? What's the Bible say about one flesh? It says a man will take his wife and become one flesh. Okay? That's when they become. Becoming one flesh doesn't make a man and a wife together.
Well, if the Ruckmanites wanted to use that as joining flesh meant they were married, what about Solomon and his 700 concubines?
Yeah, in other words, they would have been concubines, they'd been wives. And there is a place where it does call them wives.
It does. 700 yeah. wives and princesses and 300 concubines, it said. I just read that.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. So it does switch that back and forth. But again, man and wife is a covenant, not a physical thing. Joseph and Mary were man and wife before they ever came together. Okay, and people can come together and not be man and wife. Okay, just the way it works. All right. Verse 17, but he that is joined unto the Lord is one spirit. Now, here's the point. When a person gets saved, let's say when Jody, 2.5 years ago, God saved her. Her spirit and the Lord's spirit were joined together. They became one. Well, I thought he was already joined with Amy. Well, he was. I thought he was already joined with John Wesley. He was. Okay. Thought he was already joined with Bill Randall. Was. Okay. What do you have there? You're seeing a spiritual union of people. Okay, do you see that?
Is that the great voice that they're talking about?
I don't think so. But regardless of that, you're going to find Baptists who don't believe in that spiritual union. Okay? They don't see that. All right. Verse 18, flee fornication. Don't just stay away from it. Don't just kind of flirt around it. Flee it. Run from it with all your heart. Why? Because fornication is one of those things that the closer you get to it, the less control you have over it. It's not one of those things where you can come up to brinkmanship, all right? Mm-mm. Brinkmanship, you might get away with brinkmanship once. You might get away with it twice, but you won't get away with brinkmanship three times, okay? You.
Brinkmanship?
Where you come right up to the edge of something.
Oh.
All right? All right. Flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body. But he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. Now think about this. I say this thing, well, you never sin against anybody but the Lord. But here's a situation where it says you've sinned against your own body. Why? Okay?
It does say in an earlier verse that the body isn't meant for that. Also, if you pervert that, you're also perverting something God made that was perfect. It's the fleshful nature that's wrong. It's not the body itself.
It's where the body itself is wrong. The other thing is, every bit of fornication you ever do ingrains patterns in you, memories in you, it tattoos your soul, it becomes part of you, and that's all there is to it. You could take a married couple that have been married for 50 years and marital bliss, haven't known anybody else. If one of them knew somebody else before that in fornication, it will still come back and haunt them. It'll still come back. And the patterns of that thought and such will come back and hurt them. You've sinned against your own body. There is nothing better than a person who has only known one mate all their life, and that's the only one they've known. And study after study after study shows that those are the happiest people sexually, the longest lasting people who are more gratified for more of their life than anyone else. And does that mean that God can't bless you if you've gone out and made every mistake? No, God can bless you, okay? But, you know, it's one of those things, again, have a kid go chop his hand off. Can God bless the rest of his life? Yes, he can. But he's missing a hand, okay? You know, it's gone. It's just not there. And, you know, can he live a full life? Yes, he can live a full life. But there come times he'll miss that hand, okay? There's damage been done there. Fornication damages the person who fornicates, okay? It just always does, always will. And again, fornication can be an act all by yourself, no one else around, okay? And woe unto the poor girl that gets a man that's been doing that all the time, all right? Because he won't have any idea how to love her, satisfy her, anything else. It's all, and he's trained himself with weird, lurid thoughts and that kind of stuff, you know, and quick stimulation. It's just all for me and that poor girl that gets that guy, all right? Cruel and awful thing. So it's one of those things. You commit fornication, you sin against your own body, okay? What man doesn't want to marry a woman and absolutely be everything for her? Where she just longs for that. Just longs for that guy. What guy doesn't long to be that? And yet they're the ones out there screwing themselves up so they can't be that, okay? Thinking that they're helping themselves, and they're not helping themselves. They're sinning against themselves.
Can I say something?
Go right ahead.
Three times it's in the Bible that you sin against something else besides God. Twice it's against the brethren and once against
your body. Once there, yep.
Three times.
Pastor?
Yep.
On that note, it says that you sin against those things. How can I say you sin against them if you can only sin against God?
I'm the one that says you only sin against God. Okay. Don't play. David said this, against thee and thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight. And I think it's good to always look at it that sense. When Paul talks about...
Jesus also said it when he was given this, the parable of
the prodigal son. Prodigal son. When it says you sin against the brethren, what he's talking about is when you do something that is lawful for yourself, that it's not a sin against God. Okay? But when you do it, you cause that person to stumble. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's not like you stabbed that person or something. You've done something to cause him to stumble. Same thing with your body here, okay? You've done something here and say, well, there's no law against this, and you do it, well, you're going to find there was a law, okay? The law of natural sense, all right?
That's good.
But at the same time, Jesus talked about how... he's going to judge the people who taught someone else to do something that was sin. So if you give them that stumbling block, he's going to judge you because right. You gave him that stumbling block.
You know, and let me put it this way. Spink Williamson talked about, he went to St. Patrick's Cathedral with a friend of his, and here's a couple old Southern country preachers. They go to St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. And it's near Easter time. Some priest explains to him Lent, how people give stuff up. So Spink says, I decided to give up going to the bathroom. And he said, after a few hours, I got real backslid.
Yeah.
He just had a little Spink, you know. He said, I just had to go. And, but the whole point is, popular literature pictures a man That, in other words, he's this way, that he's a sexual creature that has to find release every so often. And that's a lie. That is not true.
That's right.
Okay? Men create the need for release through emotion and bringing themselves to that point with emotion, conjuring up thoughts, images, and getting the, yeah, that's right. That's why the Apostle Paul talks about and having no need. And he's talking in that sense, okay? I'll put it this way, and I understand we say young people here, but you know what? They're all in health classes and everything else. A man asked one time, did Jesus Christ ever have wet dreams? Did he ever just spill his seed, okay? And the point is, I heard a man ask that. Well, it says in the book of Leviticus that if a man spilled the seed of copulation, he's unclean. Okay, and if it chances out of him in the night, okay, well, did then that happen to Jesus Christ? No. Well, then was he a real man?
Yeah.
See what I mean? Yes, he was, and that's why the Apostle Paul says, "And I have no need." How? He keeps his mind under control. Okay, so while you're driving down,
Jesus was perfect, but could he just plan on like he? There was no way he was able to sin, or was there?
A, he did not have a nature that would ever make him sin. He had a body fully capable of it, but he did not have a nature that would do that.
With all honesty, then, him going through some of the stuff he did go through, how could we as humans and as we are, how could we relate? I mean,
A, it's one of the reasons he had to fast for 40 days to become weak. So the idea of bread really was a temptation to him, okay? That it really was something, and he had to do that to himself. And he was hurt and that he feared, okay? The idea of being turned into sin was pretty a terrible idea to him. And so in those senses, that's where we can relate to him. He related to you, though. You don't have to relate to him, okay? But it goes back to this thing again. Was he a real man? Well, the Apostle Paul, actually talking in that sense of sexual release, said, and having no need, okay? And that's really where he wants every person to be other than in a married state. How can they do it? It's controlling your mind. Well, out there, everything's set to control your mind for anything but that, okay? I remember one time driving with Mike Rizzuti somewhere, and they put up this big new Hooters poster. And... Hooters. It's a restaurant where the women all dress in very little clothes, okay? And there's this big new poster, and we're driving by, and he says, how many people see the plate of chicken wings in that? And I looked up, looked, yeah, there was a plate of chicken wings. I've never seen it. So everything, if you go look at car commercials, all right, what do they have? Some beautiful woman next to the car and such. So everything's sitting there. To get these lewd and voluptuous emotions in you, to get that going, to get that stirring inside of you. You know what the Apostle Paul's answer for that was? Let every man have his own wife. Okay? Mm-hmm. Have your own wife. And you know the thing is? It's a great thing to have. He that findeth a wife, findeth a good thing.
David said, I made a covenant with my eyes.
That's right.
Job said that. I made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a maid? All right, my eyes and I, we made an agreement, okay? I don't want to be looking that way. Don't want to be doing. And you want to know what the thing is? If I let myself slip a little,
oh yes,
it's a long time before I catch myself. It's not that I just slipped a little. It's amazing how far down the line you'll go where you go, whoa, what is going on here, you know, and such. A man can get an unclean spirit where, you know, every woman you look at, you're suddenly thinking differently about her. And it's a wretched, awful way to be. It's a terrible way to be and such. And it's one of the reasons God created marriage. There are many reasons, but that's one of them there. All right. So it goes on, flee fornication, verse 18. Every sin that a man doeth was without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. Verse 19. What know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost which is in you, which you have God and you're not your own? So when a person gets saved, God takes that body and makes it into the temple of the Holy Ghost. And let me tell you something. What the devil does from that point on is to try to get you to commit the sin unto death where God will destroy that body.
Tries to make us do it.
From that point on, he's going to try to do that. And God's long-suffering, God's gracious as far as that goes, but he's doing his best to turn that temple into a thing of honor and the way it's supposed to be. Verse 20, for ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. So it's one of those things. I knew a guy whose name was Bud. I used to tell him, I said, every morning you ought to get up and say, hey, this Bud's for you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But
don't worry about it.
I've thought many a time, though, how the people who lived back when there was kings and queens and whatnot, they didn't have to fight that battle so much because they knew what it was to be a servant. They knew what it was for someone to,
they really did,
to have a lord. And they knew how to bring that together. Whereas we are trained not to even think
Right. You know, as far as times of gross sexuality, you'll find in history that's constantly going like this. Times of just gross sexuality and just everybody's with everybody, and then it all gets cleaned up and then it all goes wrong again and such. And there's one point, I think it's in the court of Charles II, one of the men writes and he says, I don't think that there is a man here who the children in his home are his own.
Wow.
Okay? In other words, it was just that gross, everything that was going on at that time and such.
No new thing under the sun.
My mother talks about being a little girl, and they had two families that lived next door to them, and they were there. And one day she said, isn't it amazing how all her children look like Mr. So-and-so? Just a little girl in there. Mr. Trevor, could you do me that favor, Caleb? Could you go pour this out and then get me about a half a cup? Thank you, buddy. Yeah, just pour it right outside the steps there. You go out there, pour it out. Make sure you're not pouring on anybody's head unless it's your sister. That'd be okay. But
yeah.
No.
Oh, there
we
go.
Yeah.
He's got enough of his own.
All right. So he said, if you're going to glorify God in your spirit, psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, glorify God in your body. Okay. What does that mean? Okay. That God's pleased with your body. What you put into it, what you dress it with. You know, there comes a point where you ask yourself, is this how God wants me to dress? Is this how he wants me to look today? You know, is this what he's, you know, is he pleased with my diet? Is he pleased with my sleep schedule? Is he pleased with my exercise schedule? Is he pleased? Look, thank you very much, buddy. That's the best you've done all night. Good going. So, why? Because you're going to glorify him in your body. Now, going on to chapter 7. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Okay. Recently I was talking to, not real recent, but fairly recent past, I was talking to a young couple, and you know, about this thing, and well, what's wrong with us holding hands or kissing or something like that? And I just asked them, does it get you sexually aroused? Okay. And there's nothing more worthless to God and man than somebody sexually aroused that nothing can be done about it.
Yeah.
Okay? Just nothing more worthless, okay? A person who allows themselves to get sexually aroused when nothing can be done about it is a fool, all right? Who's just hurting themselves and making a complete idiot out of themselves. Yes, how do you stop from doing that? Don't touch a woman.
That's right.
Okay?
They're setting themselves up for failure.
Right. Yeah, setting themselves up for failure, misery, and really dysfunction for a large part of their life, okay? But they don't even function right because they're idiots. You know, I go back to this thing again. I've used the parallel. Imagine a father buying two boys' cars. They're twin boys, okay? Yes. And he buys them two absolutely identical cars. And he tells them the rules. All right, fellas, I want you to drive, you know, fairly calm for the first 1,500 miles. Get the oil changed then after 1,500 miles. After that, every 3,000 miles and such. And, you know, keep the RPMs this low. And, you know, gives them all the rules and such. And one boy peels out of that driveway and takes off and such. And the other one does everything exactly like Dad told him. Now, you know what? For the first 3 months, one boy had far more fun. Okay? Just had a ball, all right? But the thing is, 3 years from then, the other boy, his car is worthless now. He's wrecked it. It's destroyed. It's not working right. Engine's got to be rebuilt. Everything's wrong with it. Good. The other kid's got a car that's still working. You know what? He may have that car when he's 50 years old and still working. Why? Because he's taking care of it exactly the way he's supposed to. And in the long run, he enjoyed it far better than that kid that just went out there. Well, your body works the same way. Go ahead. All sorts of things you can do, all right? All sorts of nonsense you can get yourself into. But you want to know something? You may regret it pretty bad by the time you're 40, 50, 60 yes. years old and wish to God that you had never done that stuff with your body, that you'd never been that way with it. And again, you know, if you had a car and you ran it a little hot and didn't change the oil like you should or something for the first year, you can salvage that. There's things you can do to, you know, bring long life to that car and such. Won't be ever the same as if you did it right from the start. But there's no time like the present to say to yourself, I'm going to live clean. You know what the Lord said? He said the marriage bed is undefiled. Why did he say that? Because in the Old Testament, when a man slept with his wife, he couldn't go into the house of God for 3 days. The woman and the man were considered unclean. In the New Testament, the marriage bed's undefiled. A man can go ahead and, sport his wife, have a honeymoon moment or whatever else, walk straight into the house of God in the presence of God, and it's undefiled. Doesn't bother God for 5 seconds, okay? Just the way God made it.
Why was it different?
Again, it goes back to this thing of they weren't circumcised out of their flesh. They're still under that bondage of the law. Christ is not their head, okay? And it's just, again, it's that bondage of the law. All right, so it's good for a man not to touch a woman. Verse 2, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Okay. So what was the Lord's answer to fornication? Get yourself a wife, all right? Get yourself somebody. And you know what? If you do that the proper way, and you do it with some sense, and you get somebody that you get to know or whatever, and find out what direction they're going in, where they want to be eventually, and you're wanting to go that same way, and both of you have that worked out together and such, you know what? When you come together, things can go right for a long, long time, and you can have a lot of fun avoiding fornication, okay?
Yes.
And you can have a lot of fun doing that. You go ahead and mix up. Nothing's worse than being with somebody, and they're pulling in one direction, and you're pulling in another, okay? And you know amongst my own sons, I have those who've got mixed up in that. And and there they are with somebody now, and their allegiance physically to that person or whatever, but that person wants to go this way, they want to go that way, and you know, you just kind of drift along for a little while or whatever else, and that's a hard thing. You know, my wife and I have run into some real roadblocks in our marriage. Places where you just sit there and bam, and oh my goodness, it's all thrown into a tizzy. And there was no greater gift given to the two of us than a pastor put us together the right way. I'm just telling you, in awful moments, that has meant so much to us that God put us together. Because that temptation is taken out of the way there. It's not there to think that. Something going on? Yeah, that's all right. That's why we have Miss Tanya. I want her to follow you the rest of your life. Just turn the spigots off and such. That'll work good. All right.
Worst nightmare ever if that was the case.
Oh. Right. But finding that right wife and the two people, you probably have heard me say this 100 times. Demographers. What's a demographer? People that study human behavior and groups and things of that sort. So, for example, they might study Haitian people who work in the orange groves of Florida. And they might study them and their migrations up and down Florida and picking the oranges and what their culture is like and give statistics on it, okay? So they study that kind of thing. And so demographers have found only two groups of people in the United States who the majority of them have stayed sexually happy well into their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90 years old. In other words, they're still completely content with each other. One of them is Orthodox Jews, and the other is Amish. Now you see those old Amish women. I don't know about you, but I don't get a rise out of it. It's not one of those things where I'm, wow, wish I had that Amish mama. But you know what the difference is? You know what the difference is? that Amish farmer hasn't been sitting there watching every night, young ladies taking their clothes off, walking around in their bikinis and everything else. He's not sitting there looking at magazines with airbrushed pictures and such, and he's not stuck with all that. And you know what? That when he comes in and that woman that's got that chicken in the pot and cooking and swept the kitchen floor, raised his kids, has never lost her attraction to him. And that's, they've still had that honeymoon thing, because for every little fold of fat he's got one to go with it, all right? And, you know, and just the way it goes, you know, where she's beginning to sag a little, he sags a little, you know, and just... They grow old together, you know. His toenails are turning yellow and nasty, and well, so are hers, you know. And
anything else on the list, Mike Rodder? Oh,
well, we could go into more, but we won't.
Please don't.
But the point to that is this. What about, you know, the guy's happy. What would you give to be happy? The woman's happy. What would you give to be happy? I know people would give anything to be happy. I don't be able to just give anything to have contentment. They give anything for that. And here's people that have it, and they did it in a way that everybody tells you, oh, you can't be happy that way. Oh, they are. Okay. They are.
I was just speaking to a relative of mine who, her longest relationship, including the time she's had six kids, was a 2.5-year relationship. And she was adamant that, well, I don't go from person to person, but she's only ever had a 2.5-year relationship.
Yeah, and six kids.
And she just did not get what I was trying to say, that she needed to stop dating people and just work on whatever she needed to for her and her kids. And she just kind of looked at me. She's like, well, but I was with so-and-so for 2.5 years. And
like, wow.
And she just could not get beyond the fact that... That was not what would be considered a long relationship.
Right. You know, I was talking to my mother today. She has a friend whose brother has been married 7 times.
Wow.
And you know what this friend says? She says her brother married the same woman every time. Now, different name, different body, but same woman. Exact same style, exact same type of person. And though, if you ever see anybody that gets married over and over again, usually they're marrying the same person. They never learn the lesson. They go out there, those same character traits, those same things there, and they go out and marry, and well, it'll be different this time. And there is nothing better than God finding the right person for you.
Yes,
and you know what?
Thank you.
People are the ones that mess that up, okay?
You're right.
Yeah, God does, you know, he fights so hard to find that right person. And let me tell you something. We got a lot of people in here who came together the wrong way. Let's face that. Okay? And you know what? God straightened all that out.
Yes,
we just take the rules of God and put it together, whatever else. And, you know, and God can make the two of you content and happy together and such. And you're going to run into some temptations down the line that I would to God you didn't have to run into. Okay? Times where you look at each other and wonder. I just go back to one of the loveliest times I ever had with Jody and Chris. When they asked me, so, well, do you think God punished us with Rayanne?
Oh, God.
And here's Rayanne. You know, Chris just as gruff as can be. And there's Rayanne just lay that head on his chest and just the safest place she knows on earth and so content. And I just had to tell him, punish. God trusted you with that girl. You know? And God didn't trust them with much, but he trusted them with Rayanne.
Sure,
okay?
How about that?
And such. You know, and you, but... You'll have times when you wonder, is this a punishment because we did this? Is this a punishment we did that? You know how to get rid of that? Do as much as you can right. And when you've screwed it up, start doing right from the moment you know that you can. Do right, okay? Bob Jones Sr. used to say, do right, young man, do right. Do right to the sky. Stars fall from the skies, do right, okay? The Bob Jones students used to say, do right till the stars come out. They'd say, no, no. All right, so verse 2 again. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. Now watch this. There's a revolution in the second part of this. And let every woman have her own husband. Do women share husbands anymore? No. God saw them have their own husband. Chris can't bring home 3 different women and say, well, that's what Abraham. No. Jody says, I have my own husband. Okay. Dale can't go ahead and say, oh, I got all these different wives. Hey, he says, no, he's mine. This is my own husband, okay? That's something none of Solomon's wives could ever say that. None of David's wives could ever say that, okay? That's something that, you know, Leah and Rachel couldn't say to each other. But that's something a woman can say today. It's a liberation for women right there. Let her have her own husband. I'm liberation to you, baby. All right, verse 4. For the wife hath not power of her own body. Okay? Now watch this, but the husband. I have the power over that woman's body. Okay? And likewise, also the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Okay? Now let me tell you something. In the many years that I've done counseling, I run into far more husbands who come home with headaches and too tired, no, I've been busy all day, and leave me alone now, and I don't feel romantic, than I have with wives who pull that stunt. Far more often it's the husband pulling that stunt, okay? I don't feel like it, and yeah, blah, 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 or whatever else. You want to know something? Well, let me say this to Sammy Allen. Sammy Allen's some 80 years old, but probably 15 years ago, I spent some time with him, and, you know, we'd go into Walmart, and he used to have all these blood pressure machines, and while he'd always stick his arm in there and feel, look at that, perfect blood pressure. It always was. That man in good shape. Tim McVeigh was just telling me a story about Sammy Allen. Sammy Allen was probably close to 70 when this went on. There's a guy by the name of Silas who lives down there at the camp and such. And a friend of Tim goes into Sammy's house, and Sammy's sitting on top of Silas, has him by the beard, and saying, Silas, tell me the truth. Silas said, bam, hits him in the face again. Tell me the truth, Silas. Bam, hits him again.
Wow.
Just sitting there beating the snot out of this guy, Silas. And finally looks up at the guy and says, I'll talk to you in a moment. Just Sammy Allen. Well, you know what Sammy Allen told me? He said, I keep in good shape. And I keep myself trim for Jimmy Lou. That was his wife. He said, I'm gone a lot. And she deserves better. And just some guy lets himself go. When he walks through the door, he's in good shape as a man can be. It's for her. I'm doing it for her sake, okay? I love that, okay? It's that whole idea, you know, of your body isn't for you. From the moment you get married, that body belongs to that other person, the two of you. You're one flesh. You own that thing together. Verse 5, defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for time. What's the... We've been dealing with fornication, by not fornicating, by having your own wife. Then what's defrauding here? Refusing what goes on in marriage. That's fraud, okay? Why? Because her body belongs to me, mine belongs to her. So it said, defraud ye not one another. That actually goes back to the law, where if a man took a concubine, a lot of times a concubine had no choice in that thing. Okay, it's one of the reasons it wasn't marriage. She had no choice in it. She's there amongst the servant girls or whatever else. She's kind of a pretty chick. And you say, come on, you're with me tonight. You realize from that moment on, she has rights. From that moment on, God said, you know what? Her duty of marriage thou shalt not diminish. What's that mean? It means, well, you thought it was a one-night stand, but you want to know what, Bubba? With your other two wives, you're going to put her in the rounds. Okay? And you're going to give equal time to each one of those. And you're going to do that. Her duty of marriage thou shalt not diminish. That thing's so strong that God says you will not defraud one another. You won't cheat each other out of what is really your right for each other. You won't do that. All right. So he goes on and he says this. Defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time. You say, hey, babe, I'm trying to get some stuff together or whatever else. Let's the two of us, you know, let's go at least 20 minutes, you know, without not getting hugging or whatever. But it's with consent for a time. And you two agree of it. Now watch what it says. Yeah, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer. And then it says, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. You know what incontinency? Inability to contain. Okay, you know what they call rubber pants for adults in the store? Incontinency pants. Why? Because they can't contain their own urine. All right. So you wear that to help contain what you can't contain otherwise. All right? Well, there's more things that need to be contained than just what rubber pants will hold. So it says, when a man and a woman, all right, when a man and a woman make that agreement amongst each other, says, just for a while, lest Satan tempt you, okay? And tempt you with your incontinency, your inability to contain. You know, that's God never wants that, doesn't want that going on. All right, verse 6, but I speak this by permission and not of commandment. Now, this is fascinating because over and over again, everything Paul says, he says drawing it specifically out of that Old Testament and then applying it to the Gentiles. Right. 1 Corinthians 7 is the only place I know of in all the Pauline epistles where he steps out of that and just gives his opinion. He doesn't do it by commandment. He said, I'm doing this by permission. All right? Verse 7. For I would that all men were even as myself. What is he? Single. But every man hath his proper gift of God, one after that manner and another after that. Not every man can handle that. I don't think I could handle being a pastor without having a wife. In fact, God really doesn't want a man to be a pastor That's without right. a wife. Okay? It's one of those things.
Are they condemned if they don't, or like...
Well, it's not like they're condemned. You don't take them out and beat them up or put them in jail or anything like that. But it just... there's a number of things. One, I have to show people that I can rule my own home. Okay? And the next thing is, it's just that idea that it certainly takes care of a lot of temptations and such when I have a wife that can take care of my needs and my love and give me that affection I'm looking for and such. It would be a snare to me if I was single and I'm looking at every woman that comes in here wondering, is she the one, okay? No, I already have the one right there, all right? That's settled, that's taken care of. Bill Randall, I said, if Doris died, he would resign from the pastorate immediately. He would not want to be a pastor without her, okay?
Good old Pastor Randall.
All right. Verse 8, I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. Okay, so if you're not married or you're a widow, and there he's talking about men and women, okay, it's good for you to abide even as I abide. That'd be a good thing, all right? But if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn, all right? And it just goes on to this thing. And not everybody has the gift of being able, you know, not to hubba hubba after women, all right? And so it just said, you know, if that's the case where you're sitting there and you're kind of saying, ooh, boy, I wish I had a woman, then get married, okay? Because it's far better to do that than sitting there and you know, be lewd and looking at every woman like maybe she's possibly it or whatever else. And, you know, it's like the Polish hunter that saw a woman in the woods and said, are you game? And she said, yeah, and he shot her. What's a game warden?
The animal that a hunter hunts is called game.
Yes, sir, are you game? In other words, are you an animal that's hunted?
That's funnier than the joke.
Yeah, that's right. It is funnier than Joe. That is true, Josh. All right. Verse 10. And unto the married I command, yet I, not I, but the Lord's, no longer in with permission, let not the wife depart from her husband. Now, keep this in mind. Marriage is flesh joining flesh, not spirit joining spirit, not soul joining soul. That's wonderful when that happens, okay? Marriage is flesh joining flesh, and it goes back to the commandments of God, how that works. When a person is married, you're actually entering into something that was before the fall of man, okay? Something that God gave before man ever fell. He's allowing you into a taste of Eden. Okay, now, if you've been married at any time, it can also be a taste of hell.
Yeah.
And it can, okay? Marriage gone wrong is one of the most hellish things you'll ever be through. And every married couple here has had a taste of that, okay? Where it just turned into hell, all right? And you know what? I usually kick the husband's butt for that, all right? Am I saying the wife was totally guiltless? No. But I usually kick the husband's butt He's the one who's most likely to put that back in order, become what he's supposed to be, make that marriage what it's supposed to be. But when it comes to marriage, God has commandments. You can't just say, well, this is the age of grace, I can do what I want. No, it says, Paul said, I didn't command it, God commanded this, okay? Let not the wife depart from her husband. Verse 11, but, and if she depart, let her remain unmarried, or be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. Now, we're going to get into this, and I don't have a lot of time to go into this like I want, and I'm going to probably shut it down now. Let's leave everybody hanging, okay? We're going to find, for example, Amy knows what it's like to have a man walk away from her. She doesn't know why, okay? Walked away. Didn't want her anymore. Put her into a fit of depression, agony, out of control, okay? It's an awful thing. Tanya's had that happen to her. Man's walked away from her, okay? So the thing is, Paul just said, well, I'd have her stay that way. But we're going to see he made provision.
Yeah.
Okay? He made provision, okay? And we're going to see that. Where God looked at her and God pitied her and God says, here's what we'll do for you, all right? So I want you to see that. So next week we'll have Bible study again. Then it'll be the end of November before we have Bible study again, all right? All right, so let's go. Dale, why don't you close us in prayer?
Father, we do thank you for tonight. Thank you for what we learned, Lord. May we take what we learned and put it into our minds, Lord. May we think about these things, especially the young men and young women that are in this room who've heard these things, Lord. May they use common sense. May they use the Word of God to protect themselves from committing that fornication, committing that sinning against their own body, and waiting for the direction that you give them, Lord, and not have to be drugged through the things that many of us have been drugged through, Lord, and still have to deal with, Lord. Pray to protect their minds and their hearts, their ears, what they say and do, how they walk and live, Lord. May they stay in your word and hide it in their heart, Lord. May we leave here differently than when we came here. We thank you for it all. In Jesus' name we pray, Lord. Amen.
Amen.